Hello, everyone, and welcome to Primecast Episode 25, News and Announcements. Here's the latest from Privateer Press. Ongoing development and upgrades continue on the War Machine app. Last month, the app received an update that had been long in the work that improved stability and performance while enabling the force sorting function. Meanwhile, the app continues to fill up with weekly content for subscribers, including the latest installment of Emergence by Eric Ryerson. We also saw the introduction of the new Duos format, allowing for armies with two leaders, and the card library was updated with the rules for the upcoming Ghost of Ios, as well as the Storm Legion's entry into the Apotheosis series of Privateer Press exclusive warcasters, Captain Rafe Huxley. The high-flying and heavily armored Huxley is currently available to pre-order and will take flight on March 8th, so order now to be the first shipment going out. This month, all sights are trained on Adepticon as we ready for this year's first legendary event, the Siege of Skarsvall. Advanced Intel has spotted Garlgast in the vicinity of Ord's northern border, so we may be getting our first look at the Mark IV Gargantuan in action in just a few weeks. If you're attending Adepticon, also be on the lookout for the Dragonfall Encore event, as well as the Iron Gauntlet Qualifier and events for Warcaster and Monsterpocalypse. The February Iron Kingdoms Requiem RPG DLC is now available in the Privateer Press online store. The Assassin's Way. Get it before it gets you. And keep your eyes peeled for the upcoming Strangelight Workshop Kickstarter campaign that will be bringing the Iron Kingdoms ghost-busting goodness to your game table this year. And if you've been waiting for something to flesh out your Mark IV army with, Solus Blademasters, Ulcor Axers, and the Sea Raiders expansion are back in stock, as well as the Winter Core army starter. And now, let's get to the program. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Primecast. Joining me in the intro is none other than the captain of the ship himself, Matt Wilson. How you doing today, Matt?
Hey, Emmanuel. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Always a pleasure. You know, we were hanging out in the behind the scenes before and just talking shop, and the game is in such a great place right now. You could talk about fiction, you could talk about the rules, you could talk about the models, and never have a moment to breathe. And we had to actually start recording so that you could get to listen to all the awesome things we had to talk about.
That's right. I think we've covered all of that in the last like 10 or 15 minutes.
And this is two for two. You're back to back. I've got you again.
Yeah. Well, last month we were talking about the new SKU configuration for the upcoming Krix Necrofactorium army, mm-hmm. right? And I got a little bit ahead of myself. So I wanted to come back and correct some inaccuracies I reported now that we understand a bit more about them.
Uh-oh. So did you give us some fake news?
Not on purpose. But there was some confusion on my part, and we had overlooked an important aspect of this sort of new template that we're moving forward with, starting with the Necrofactorium. Basically, what I had said was that we'd be leading with the command starter that is priced at $80, which we solicited last month, and it has 30 points of models in it. And then we have two $130 to $150 expansions, each of which, when added to the starter, would get you to 75 points. And that was my assumption at the time. But shortly after that, as we got into more detail with the army, you know, in our discussions and development, I realized that I had overlooked a couple of key things. And the first of those things was that the command starter wasn't taking anything out of what would have originally been our normal core army starter, right? That big box. So these all character command starters are actually growing the overall footprint of the armies by a few models. And what this means is that we still have an equivalent number of options for the Necrofactorium that you'd find in any of the current Mark IV armies right now. So that means then that we were either going to end up with a $200 expansion and a $130 expansion, mirroring what we have in the current armies, or something was going to have to change.
That's not what you were shooting for, was it?
No, we wanted to eliminate that $200 box set. It's not a price point that everybody's always comfortable with. And so we were trying to break things up in, you know, a more palatable fashion. So where we ended up is were breaking the Warjacks out of the larger box set,
Oh.
that you'd find right now in that core army set. So we were planning on doing a battle group anyway, and we also offer the Warjacks a la carte for people who want to go, heavier on their armor. So it made sense to take them out of the bigger core box. And what that means is that we end up with the $80 command starter, a battle group. Maybe I'm going to come back to this in a second. And then what we're calling the core expansion and the auxiliary expansions that will both be priced along the same lines that the current army expansions are priced right now. And our hope is that while this adds, one SKU to each of the armies, that the somewhat lower price points make collecting a little easier, not having to bite off that $200 chunk all at once.
That seems reasonable and thoughtful. So I start with a command starter, then I add a battle group to fill out my Warjacks. Then I get the core expansion to start adding units, and the auxiliary expansion gives me all the extra options I'm looking for. Is that it?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So now that takes me to the second thing that I'd overlooked, though, when I assumed that we knew where we were going with this. So while we don't consider points value in how we price things, the practicality of it is that points kind of average out over a certain number of models, when you have your full army. And when we get into the units with lots of troopers, 45 points of models is a lot of models. So the error that I had made was assuming that the expansions would add up to 45 points, right? And that the command starter plus an expansion was going to achieve about 75 points. But I was thinking of the expansion in terms of the current core army starters that include the Warjacks. So when the Warjacks are taken out, we end up at around 30 points or so of models per expansion. And that means to get to that 75 point level, you need the command starter, a battle group, and an expansion, which actually should probably end up more like 85 or 90 points, because we're aiming for about 30 points per SKU, including the battle group and the command starter.
So to hit 75 points, I need the command starter, a couple Warjacks, and then the units and solos from the expansion. Isn't that basically what we need right now?
Yeah, only I didn't exactly say it correctly last time. So after I had my facepalm moment meeting with the dev team, I wanted to come back and set the record straight.
Record straightened. Now, you said you had something else to say about the battle group?
Yeah. So we're still going back and forth on this one in development and haven't quite made a final decision on it. But with the new command starters being the ideal purpose design starting point into a new army, we're trying to determine whether or not it actually makes sense to maintain the battle group with a Warcaster and Warjacks in it, as well as offering those Warjacks and individual SKUs, or if we just offer the individual SKUs. In the end, it doesn't change the SKU count, and it doesn't change, really anything other than just how things are packaged. But we've seen a number of people asking if we'd still maintain the battle groups. So I think we're kind of assuming that we would, but at the same time, maybe it's a little redundant. It's something that I'm going to be interested in hearing feedback on once people have a chance to listen to this program.
That makes sense. We love getting the feedback from the community. So then what else is coming up for Crix?
Well, we've spoiled the heck out of them online, showing off the concept art as it's been rolling.
Heck yeah.
There's one more upcoming model that'll be in the core expansion that we'll probably have shown off by the time this episode is live. And then after that, we have the entire auxiliary expansion to show off. And then also, we've got their Apotheosis Warcaster coming up, and an 80 millimeter solo, and then eventually a Colossal.
A Colossal! We have Jason and Eric joining us after this segment to talk Colossals. So that seems pretty timely. Any other spoilers?
Well, just this morning, we got the concept art in for the Maelstrom, so we'll be showing that off soon.
What is the Maelstrom?
That is the Storm Legion Colossal that'll follow the Abyssal King. So things are going to be getting real big real soon.
Bigger is better. I can't wait to see these giants back on the tabletop. So much to look forward to. It's going to be a great segment after this talking about them. I cannot wait.
It is. It's good stuff. Just keeps coming in. So, well, before I give too much away or risk talking about something that I don't know anything about, let's roll the drums.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. In this segment, I am joined by War Machine developers Jason Souls and Eric Ryerson, and we've got some pretty big things to talk about. And I'm going to tell you, before we got onto this recording, we had to untangle the web of what we could talk about and not talk about, and it is going to be a tightrope of top secret, classified, and mostly redacted files for you to listen to. So, gentlemen, how's it going?
Doing good. How's it going?
Doing great, Emmanuel. How about you?
I'm always happy to have you both on here. It's always a fun podcast, and there's so much to talk about and so much that we can't talk about. It's fun to tiptoe around it. So, Jason, when we were behind scenes, you were talking to me a little bit about the difference between the Kador tech and how it evolved, the Signar tech and how it evolved. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that here with these Colossals and give you some background as well as maybe a spoiler or two. Jason, let's talk some Kador.
All right. Yeah. So the Mastodon was one of the first, the new Colossals that we started to dig into. And we definitely wanted to see something new out of them. And with customization that we introduced to Mark IV, we got the chance to do that. So it's sort of a, you know, your usual mix and match of weapons and heads and things, except this time we're looking at the largest models in the game. And so we had to really dig in and figure out what customization meant. And also the place of these models in the game as it was evolving. And we ended up with basically Colossals that are about the same hardiness as what we saw in previous versions of the game and what we've already introduced as far as their strength levels go with the legacy models. But adding those, the some of the heaviest weapons as secondary weapons from the heavy warjacks really kind of amp things in another direction. So it's almost the case of the Signar Maelstrom is the first, you know, holy galvanic Colossal. That's a real tech leap for Signar. But in the case of the Mastodon, we're back to the real industrial workhorses of the Colossals. So I feel like a lot of the real challenges around fitting them into the game was, at least for the Mastodon, was definitely more on the development side than necessarily pushing the new tech side. You've already seen most of what the thing can do. It's just, it's so much power now in one place to balance.
One thing we see is with the firepower on these things and for just interactivity within the game, we do want them to be not just super far range guns and not physically being present in the battle. But we also don't want it to be exclusively close range and risk getting minimized or miss out on a lot of turn-to-turn output. So we're trying to balance some long-range interactivity with close range and special abilities and make it something that is desirable for both parties to interact with directly. When it comes to the Mastodon, you'll see that pretty present. It has the most vicious and heavy-handed melee that we've seen, especially now that we're putting melee weapons in their fists. You'll see that ramped up. But it also has a pretty good suite of guns that amounts to taking several heavy warjacks worth of output while still having its own unique spin on things. And in the end, we wanted them to look very similar to the design space that other Kador has always fallen into. We didn't want to go completely off the wall or completely divergent. The Conquest was always an impressive jack, and it informed us on a direction to go while still being new, but calling back to the roots that made the faction popular so many years ago.
It was a real conversation we had about getting handheld weapons in, and we felt like it was a natural evolution that we really wanted to see because we hadn't done that with the older generation. They were just kind of using their fists, and whereas they were obviously fairly powerful, what happens if you give a Conquest a giant axe?
Yeah, the idea that now that they're fighting each other, like there's those other colossal things out there, a fist which would do whatever it needed to against smaller targets, and now needed escalated weaponry to fight against the expanded breadth of options that other things were bringing to bear.
That is awesome. It reminds me of the old rulebook art that has been floating around in War Machine for a long time of the Colossals before there were ever Colossals. They were just like gigantically huge with like massive steam stacks and arms. And this new generation just feels like it's almost creeping back to the old times of Orgoth where the war just keeps escalating. Having play tested with some of this, I really feel like customization allows a lot of options where you can say, I have this Warcaster or Warlock, and I really like to play them, and I really want to play the Colossal, and I can make it fit this army or this loadout or this point scheme. And that freedom has been just amazing in a Colossal space because when it comes to an investment, both in points and on the table and in your strategy, it has to be dynamic. It has to be important. You put a focus on it, it goes a long way. You put, it generates a fury, whatever it happens to be. And that point for point model has just been so much fun to play. I'm so excited for Mark IV customizable, interchangeable Colossals.
So when we got to dig into Signar and the new Maelstrom Colossal, we got to take the tech even further because Signar's been revolutionizing the development of their warjacks, and we're seeing the first Holy Kalvanic warjacks. And so we're looking at this thing, and all the Colossals kind of have this heavy weapon that isn't customizable, that they're kind of based around. So we knew we wanted to sort of play with something powerfully lightning based for Signar. I'm not going to go into it too much, but it might be the longest range spray weapon we've seen so far. There's your spoiler.
What? That's crazy. Awesome. And you can really do different things in the new spray space in Mark IV, so that's so cool.
It's sort of got this Starblazers wave motion gun centered in it.
What?
So it's a spectacular model and something I don't think we've really aesthetically seen before at a Signar. It gives us a lot to play with.
That's awesome. I am hyped up. So that gives us two of the four massive targets here. But let's talk about the Garlgast because it's a little different.
Yeah, so the Garlgast occupies a real different space. It's a, well, first of all, it's a monstrosity, and it's a spidery monstrosity from a jungle island called the Garlgast. And the Orgoth began developing monstrosity tech almost in parallel with Warjack tech, apparently. We're still sort of pulling back the shadows on how their technologies developed and where they, developed the strange spirit tech that kind of replaces the cortexes of their war beasts. So it's kind of a natural evolution of for them to experiment on these giant alpha predators that had actually kind of haunted the landscape of their own homeland. We're kind of looking at them like they lived on Skull Island off the, Orgoth coast and would show up in occasionally terrify and wreak havoc on the poor Orgoth Empire, if you can say those words out loud.
Oh, the poor Orgoth Empire. Whoop, whoop. No, that's great, though. They just have like King Kong kicking about.
Kinda, yeah. And for long centuries, these things would just show up like natural disasters. And finally they started to develop the technologies to conquer them. And we were, debating whether captured Garlgasts would fight in Orgoth gladiator pits against the mightiest warriors and this and that. And we'll have a compendium coming up on each of the Colossals, Monstrosities, Gargantuans coming up in the app. So we'll be fleshing out their whole backgrounds in the near-term future and actually right in the Garlgast is the next thing on my plate. So I have a head full of it right now that I wish I could tell you more about.
With their entire society devoted to overpowering and enslaving any sort of opposition, they ran into beasts that couldn't be as easily enslaved or overpowered. So they had to develop technology to sort of harness them in a new way, when they were incapable of subjugating them through their traditional means, and that's sort of being explored here as well.
I like your comparison of it being like a natural disaster. Can you imagine they're just like, you see that hurricane over there? That's going to be mine one day. I'm going to slap a cortex in it and just ride it home.
Or instead of Vesuvius, you just have, you know, a couple of these things show up.
Terrifying. So, Eric, why don't you tell us about the capacities of the Garlghast?
The Garlghast is a fierce and ferocious creature. We put a lot of its power and energy into its melee capabilities. But that's not to say it doesn't have that long-range involvement. If anyone who's seen the art can see its rocket pods and wrist-mounted spray weapons. One unique thing here is it has more health than any other model we've ever released. It has 72 boxes that you'll have to chew through. It's one of the aspects that sets it apart from regular jacks as a monstrosity. 72 sounds like a lot. That's what two traditional monstrosities would have had, which are way lower point costs. But being on a bigger platform that's easier to buff, it's going to be quite a challenge to try and chew through these things. Fortunately, we sort of understand that with the increased power level we've given these, their points increased as well. And increasing their points sort of freely has enabled us to explore weapon options and interactivity that we haven't been able to before because we were trying to keep things in a tighter range. So you'll get to see a lot of new interesting interactions out of these larger models that you may not have seen previously.
I have had a blast playing the Garlghast. It is a really cool model, and the concept that it kind of is this bigger monstrosity. So yes, lots of health, but also just like a big flesh target. It's so cool. And it's very Orgoth. Like everything about it just feels, screams Orgoth. I think this was like a home run, grand slam, whatever you want to call it, equivalent of just ship it. It's so good.
It was really fun during the design process where we had like 20 different creatures drafted and we pulled aspects from different ones and sort of slowly shaped it into our ideal frame for being this living weapon. And it was fun to watch all these different concepts come together to make sort of like the perfect monster for us.
That brainstorm space is really fun in design. So it's cool to hear about it, you know, and what you kind of draw inspiration from. So tell me, what inspired the Abyssal King?
Long conversations. We had a rough idea of what we wanted, but also we already tread so much of the same ground with models we had done before that the Abyssal King, we really wanted to kind of break out and to see something new. So we really got to explore that capacity for these immense trolls to draw aspects of their environment. And we wanted this Leviathan creature from the depths who would just be the, you know, the terror of sea captains from coast to coast and harness that real power for the brine bloods and get to explore some really new shapes. And we kind of pushed what it was to, you know, be a troll and be identifiable as a troll. And kind of its armament almost came later after we, you know, delved into this real exploration of masses and body shapes and, you know, how far from troll we could get.
Matt came up with the great idea of having sort of this story represented where the creature is actively looting a ship and utilizing things it's broken off of it as its customizable weapons. And it makes the creature not just a creature, but like a story unfolding on the base. That makes it a really exciting model to paint to me.
Yeah, like the ship's like prow, like the thing that's off the front of it is, what is that called?
A prow figurehead.
Yeah, that figurehead, right? It is like the representation for the animi.
Yeah, so depending on what ship he's looting, whatever they had, magical protections upon the ship or whatever, sort of enhancing him as he's wrapped around it.
That is so sick. You know, so there was a conversation I was having in the game shop one night after hours. You know, we'd just played games, having pizza, and the Abyssal King's art had just been spoiled, and so of course we're talking about it. And we were recalling the fact that we were talking Mark IV Colossals. We talked about the Archangel, and we're like, where do you go from like something so amazing, so impressive? Like, how do you top something from that edition. And then the Abyssal King dropped and everybody went, what? That's how you do it. Like, that's how you come over the top and do something just incredibly awe-inspiring and amazing. And the story it tells is going to be cinematic on the table. And so it was, you know, it brought a lot of kind of crackling excitement to the conversation. You could see everybody hyped up for whether it was going to be on their side or a boss monster they had to conquer.
Man, writing the rules for that thing, I stared at that art for probably an hour before pen touched the page. Just the realization of what even is this? How do you describe what this thing does? Like, oh, it's hurtling pieces of the ship. And it was a challenge just to wrap your head around its rules. Like, that storytelling is fascinating visually, but it's also unfolds on that thing's rule card in the app. It was a challenge all around, and I think it uniquely paid off.
I tend to agree. I really like how we managed to capture the feel of it actively interacting with what it's on while still being this unique creature that you're going to have to fight against. And the story coming to life on the table is pretty fun in its own right. And like you said, how do you do the same thing again? It's like our top the previous thing, trying to find something different, untapped areas, new inspirations. And that's a lot of fun all in itself.
Absolutely. I think it would also make one of the most cinematic epic bosses in the Iron Kingdoms if anybody was like, I need an RPG boss that by the end of this, like, people walked away from feeling like gods. That thing is just incredible. I think a lot of people are going to own it just to paint. Well, this has been an outstanding conversation on Colossals. Are there any parting shots that either of you want to say about Colossals, about these Colossals? Anything you feel like you didn't get a chance to say, or maybe you had a spoiler hiding under your seat somewhere that you wanted to shake out?
I cannot wait to see the Necrofactorium Colossal.
Woo!
I mean, on a similar note, I can't wait to see the Shadowflame Shard Gargantuan.
Jesus. Well, I can't wait to see any of it. I can't wait for all of it to drop. Like, it's just one big thing after the next, and it's a good time to be playing War Machine. That's all we have in this segment. We're going to hit the drums and roll on to our next segment with John Swinkles to talk convention and organized play. Eric, I know you want to say roll drums.
You know me too well. Roll drums.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. Joining me in this very special, first of its kind segment is, drum roll, please. Mike, I asked for the drum roll.
Oh.
Nailed it. Is Mike Ryan. Mike, you do so much at Privateer Press, but why don't you tell us what your official job title is?
Sure. I am a director of publications. That has a lot of meaning behind it because we've done an enormous number of publications over the years. I've been with Privateer for over 10 years now. So I started with the company working on No Quarter as the editor in chief. I worked on the Skull Island Expeditions. I personally was involved in getting the pins launched because I was a huge pin collector. Mm-hmm. And now I work on the app. I handle all of the company's editing. So every time you find a mistake out there in Privateer Press text, that's me.
Well, it is an absolute pleasure to have you on. Mike is one of my absolute favorite people at Privateer. He's always got something fun to say. He is involved in so many different projects. Mike and I have worked together. We have worked together on Monpok Fiction and all kinds of different stuff. It is just so exciting to have you on for your first time on this Primecast in 10 years.
I'm super excited about that. I have actually waited a long time to be asked. I figured that, you know, Emmanuel, you just didn't like me. So I was just rolling with it.
No, absolutely. You know, being one of the busiest people at Privateer, I don't want to take any more of your time than we have to, because there's always something going. The wheel is always turning and deadlines got to be met.
Yes, I'm afraid that they do. I also write the solicitation. And as I said, I edit everything that comes through. And that's every single day, every insider, every post. That's all me. So, I'm a little bit busy, just a little.
It's so true. The sea of words that flows from Privateer Press. So, speaking of that, let's dive into the fiction here and potential spoilers ahead, because Mike didn't come on here just to hang out with me. He's got some stuff to say.
That's right. So that spoiler alert is out now. You know how you get those weird notices if a tornado is coming to your town? Brace yourself. It goes like this. If you don't want me to ruin anything that's in the app, the fiction, the lore, now's the time to just fast forward past me.
Oh, I love it. I'm going to make that a sound bite. It just every time we have a spoiler, it's going to be Mike just going whoop, whoop, whoop.
I'm so proud of myself.
Nice.
Okay, so you want to talk about the app fiction? I'm ready to talk about the app fiction.
Heck yes.
Okay. So you may have noticed, if you're a subscriber, you will have noticed that we've started publishing a pretty healthy amount of fiction. We needed a place for the lore. If you read the lore text on various models, cards that come in the box, you're not getting a story. You're getting a summation. You're getting a bullet point list of who this character is or what this warjack does, how it fits into the greater scheme of an army. But it doesn't tell you what it sounds like and feels like when the Orgoth ships come ashore. That's in the app. We have done a handful of pieces now. I want to start by telling you I'm going to reveal bits and bobs here. Once more, Dark Rising. Aaron Riddell wrote a 6-part story about the Orgoths' arrival, led by Sabreth, amongst others, and their first encounter with the Cadorans, which is a big deal because it was the first time that anybody had run in to the Orgoth after all of the time since the first invasion. Aaron, you may or may not know, used to work directly in Privateer Press. He wrote a handful of books for us for Skull Island, and he used to be the head of Skull Island's production, as well as, before that, editor-in-chief of No Quarter. In fact, he hired me, and I worked for him. He has a great deal of knowledge about the background of the Iron Kingdoms, and he brings it to bear in the 6 parts of Dark Rising. Next, Matt Wilson himself said, I can write. Can I write? I want to write. And so he wrote 4 parts to a story called Dead on Arrival. The Signarans encounter the Iosans for the first time, and they have a secret to share that they need the Signarans to know about. Again, fantastic writing. Wilson obviously knows the world, knows the setting, and he knows what he wants to see coming on the horizon. That takes us to Dragonfall. We come back to Aaron Riddell. There's 5 parts plus an epilogue, all in the app. This is chaos. It's Signar, it's Orgoth, and as the title gives away, dragons.
Everybody loves dragons.
Yes, absolutely. You may have also read parts and bits and pieces of Eric Rearson's writing, currently appearing in, I think we're up to part 3 coming out, maybe part 4. Then we have Emergence. This is Eric Rearson. It's 5 parts. 3 have been published so far. This is the origin of the Shadowflame Shard. And it's got a good focus on Saren and Ryas and what became of them after Henchhold. Matt Goetz and I wrote the first half of the Henchhold Chronicles. We were doing it in little sound bites on Twitter. And getting Saren and Ryas up to the threshold of the gate across time and space was a big deal to us. So to see Eric picking up the Shadowflame Shard and really owning it, moving that story forward, showing how Everblight still fits in the story, fantastic. And then the last piece I want to mention, which I hope that people will go back and review, is Unstoppable. This is another Matt Wilson piece, and it has 3 old-time characters in it, Kane, Magnus, and Carver. And it's got a really nice Old West vibe to it. Finally, just as an aside, There's another awesome piece coming of fiction written by Matt Goetz. It's called Unbowed, and I don't want to tell you who it's about yet because I suspect that you'll hear this right before it comes out, and I want you to go look and see. Now, let me tell you about how the whole thing is coming together to share with people going forward.
Tell us, Mike.
The story segments are broken up one a month. Well, when you get a story like, let's say, Emergence, maybe you're reading Emergence right now in the app, you haven't read part two for a month when you get to part three. So you may pause and go, wait, what happened? Wait, where are we? Who are these people? Have I ever read this before? I have to do this on a nightly basis. If I read a book and I read it before I go to bed, when I start to pick it up the next night, I got to go back two pages just to figure out, where was I? What's happening? It's been a month. So we're going to start putting short summations, the what has gone before section, before each part. So the reader's reminded what they read a month ago or 2 months ago, or in the case of something like Dark Rising, 5 months ago. You need that summation. And we're going to begin this with the next part of Emergence later this month. That will also only be available in the app because we don't want to put it in an insider and spoil the history of a story that somebody might not yet have subscribed and had a chance to read. Many years ago, I read a trilogy of books that had this what has gone before summation at the beginning. And I bought all three books at the same time. And I was like 14 years old. So I just looked at what has gone before in part three while I was still reading part one. And I was like, oh, wow, I wish I hadn't read this. Wow, I wish I hadn't read this. Wow, I wish I hadn't read this. So we don't want to put it on the public forum. If you read all the insiders we put out, you'll be like, why did you tell us that? So this will just be in the app, but it'll be right before the piece. So you're about to read a version of chapter three. You'll have summation of chapter one and chapter two. You're not going to read a 10-page summation of a 15-page article.
What we'll need now is that sound clip of Mike. So every time you open it up and you go to that summation, it hits you with the spoiler alert warning sound.
That's right. That's right. You see the line, what has gone before, and you have to click on it to go look, and it goes,
yes.
A periscope up, heads up, don't do this, don't do this. You're going to ruin it for yourself.
It's just your face.
I just want to tell you now that, you know, there'll be a story one day where we'll just kill everybody and there'll be no spoiler alert, which is the whole Iron Kingdom. One nuclear war, and we won't tell anybody it's coming. Just that'll be the end. Start
so
over.
So many tears on that day.
So many. So one of the things then that we do want to make available, though, is you're hearing me talk about everything from Dark Rising to Unbowed, and you may say, where's this fit? How's this work? The Iron Kingdoms has a very, very elaborate history. And I remember when I first came on board reading book after book after book of these histories of like, wow, okay, so that's what happened with Vinter. Got it. Well, we need to get a timeline rolling. So by the end of May, we're going to publish an insider with a timeline of all the fiction in the app in chronological order that has a one or two line summation so that if you're excited about Signar, you know which ones feature characters. If you're excited about Saren and Rise, you'll go, oh, we should read all the Shadowflame Shard pieces. So we're going to publish that at the end of May or thereabouts, and then we will add to it. Every time something new comes out, we'll add another piece to the timeline. So at some point, you'll just be able to go to that and go, have they talked about my favorite character yet? Yes, there he is. And it'll build the world, right? The disadvantage to not having Skull Island Expedition and No Quarter available is that there are fewer avenues in which to publish the fiction now. Mm-hmm. But the app is the perfect place for it. Anything that we can break into multiple parts can be put in the app for indefinite amount of time. Now, we don't want to do one every single week, right? You know, you want your battle forged and you want your heroes and villains. So we got to spread them out, but we can highlight them for you in ways where if you are really into the fiction and the lore, and I know that there are hardcore fans of that, we start steering you in the right direction.
Absolutely. I'm one of those hardcore fans. Like, I mean, there are half a dozen Iron Kingdoms books sitting on my desk right now, right? Like, I would love to have all those apped. And so it is just fantastic what we can do with the technology now and the availability to have it at your fingertips everywhere you go.
Right. And that's the thing that we want to keep promoting. So when Emergence, which is still ongoing, wraps up in May, it is going to be just in time for two new sagas. I'm sure that people are waiting for us to get to some other stuff, and we are. The Brineblood Marauders are coming. We've got fiction for them coming. And we have an especially engaging saga coming devoted to Crix and the Necrofactorium.
Woo!
Yeah, I think that a lot of people are keen on this one. We haven't heard much out of Crix, but it's coming. And the Brineblood Marauders, you can't go wrong with pirate stories, you know? Pirate stories are always going to be cool. So these are both going to be pieces that are coming up starting in May and will probably carry on until almost the end of the year. So there's stuff to look forward to there.
That's amazing. A lot to look forward to, and it gets me hyped up just to have you on here, Mike. I could sit here and listen. You could probably just read the fluff to me, and I would just keep it going forever. Like, you have a great voice for this. So it was so awesome to have you on to talk about it. And a man of his passions, you speak like you write. So
Well, thank you, sir. That's very kind of you. So can I put a plug in? Is it okay if I plug? I'd like to
100%,
plug.
please.
Okay. So I obviously am really passionate about the world building. I'm very passionate about the fiction. I love fiction. I love watching these characters come to life. And if you're not subscribing, gang, you're missing out. You're missing out a lot. Now, maybe you just want to play. Holy cool. You can get the app for free, but you don't get all of the extra stuff like the world building compendiums, the playable battle scenarios, and those deep dive on characters for the heroes and villains, and this lore, this fiction. It doesn't cost much, gang. It's $5 a month, $4.99. You can get it off of Google Play. You can get it off of the Apple App Store, and you will get all of these stories, right? And we've got more coming. So I really want to encourage people to come in and see what we're doing. The Shadowflame Shard stuff, dynamite, absolutely dynamite. And it's wrapping up soon. So the whole story will be available to you in just a couple months. Get on board. Get on board and see how the world is growing. I'm also personally hoping to do a little bit of writing for it myself in the future. The disadvantage to being the editor for everything that comes through is that I'm busy. There's a lot of text. And we have great writers. If you've ever read anything by Jason Soles, he writes those compendiums. He's dynamite, but he also can write 30 pages of text. I don't know, in
Prolific.
2 minutes. Yes, he's really, really efficient and fast. So I sometimes feel like he can write faster than I can edit. And so I'm frequently saying, well, maybe I'll try to write some lore here. No, I won't. I'm going to edit the Necrofactorium piece that Jason Soles just finished, and that's pretty much the rest of the month. He's great. Eric is a solid writer. He's got all kinds of vocabulary. In fact, periodically we have to say to Eric, that's a hard word for people to grasp. As an editor, I had to look it up, Eric. So let's use a little bit of an easier word. He
That
writes above
tracks.
my, he writes over my head, right? I have a bachelor's degree in English, and I'll read something that Eric writes and go, damn, he's really smart. I better look this word up and make sure it's right.
Eric is crazy smart. I always love talking to him.
And then of course, Aaron and Matt Wilson both love the world. And so anytime a piece comes in from them, I'm like, this could be great. This could be great. This could be so exciting. So I hope that people who are listening get excited too and come see what's in the app.
And gets to.
Oh, Matt, hell, I'm sorry, I forgot Matt Goetz. Matt Goetz writes 90% of the IKRPG material.
He does. It's
And
great.
when it's coming across my desk, he's the easiest edit ever. he obviously fact checks all of his stuff. He looks up comma rules, and every day I get IMs from him first thing in the morning when I first get up, and he says, "Ooh, I had this idea. What do you think about this?" Okay, that's pretty awesome. And so he's asked me to write a few things for him for the IKRPG. And he's a far better writer than I am, and I think I'm pretty good.
He's such an intricate writer. I love reading Git stuff. And I think one of the neatest things about having the fiction in the app right now is that we're getting this drip of fiction that coincides the releases of the armies, and it just makes everything feel so cinematic and current and alive when you're like, oh, I just read about this, and oh my gosh, there's the model, and hey, now I get to play against it on the table next month, right? Like, it builds this epic that is going on that you get to participate in, and it's one of the reasons.
That's a great thing about Matt Wilson is that If you don't know, if you've never had the opportunity to talk to Matt at a convention or read about him someplace, Matt is a cinematic guy. He writes screenplays, gang.
Oh, yeah.
And so he sees everything in his head of the beats of a story and, you know, the camera angle, quote unquote, point of view. He is very focused on how are we presenting the story so that people see it. So that if next month somebody reached out and said, hey, we want to do a War Machine movie, they could just pick it up and start adapting. I'm sure you've read books in the past in which you went, yeah, this will never be a movie. It's somebody's got to spend 10 years on a screenplay to make this presentable in that sort of format. Not War Machine. Our stories, you can see them. Mm-hmm. You can see every sword swing. You can hear every word of dialogue that somebody like Cain says to Magnus. Wait till you read Unstoppable. If you haven't read Unstoppable, it's gonna be great fun. You can see it on the screen by seeing it in your head, and that is 100% thanks to our leadership.
It's interesting looking at, you know, talking about Matt and Aaron and all of these like War Machine Iron Kingdoms experts, right? There's so much knowledge wrapped up in them and their brains about. Like every time I talk to Matt Wilson, I always feel like he gives me a deeper understanding of the Iron Kingdoms. Like, you know, when they say 10,000 hours for mastery, right? He's so far beyond that that you'll bring up something and then he'll remember like 10 years ago when there was a subnote about somebody dying and he's like, no, that character's dead. And I'm like, but where? I know the fuck. He'll know it. Like, he knows yep, it like the back of his hand.
I see that all the time too, Jason and Aaron and Getz, oh, yeah, and Wilson, because absolutely. I can't remember all the state capitals. I couldn't put the presidents in order for you. I don't know. Washington was first, I think. That's it. I can't. They have details that go down to minutia, like you say, like a footnote in one book from 20 years ago. How do they do it? I don't know, but I'm glad they do. Matt Getz, he's the dude's a walking encyclopedia for the War Machine and Iron Kingdoms universe. Jason Soule knows so much that I think he's forgotten what he knows.
Absolutely. And, you know, this opens up the door for us to do fluff segments here on Primecast where Mike, you and I can bring on the authors and talk specifically. It's like I have Jason on here all the time. I have Eric on here all the time, but I don't necessarily get to talk about fiction with them because there's so much going on. And I am just so excited that in 2024, we have so much fiction to talk about. We're going to break ground on a whole new segment.
I think that would be a great idea, and I would advocate for all those guys, plus Aaron Riddell.
Of course, because yeah.
Aaron's a fantastic writer, and Aaron is taking on, I believe, both the Brian Bloods fiction and the Necrofactorium fiction that's coming in the latter half of the year.
Amazing. Well, Mike, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on talking about all this. Is there anything else you want to talk about here? Parting shots, any last passion projects or ideas you want to bring up?
I will say this. We would love to hear from you guys who you want to read about. I have some personal favorites, and I'm not going to reveal who I want to write about, but there's a character in the Iron Kingdoms that I am gung ho to write about. But who do you folks love? Who do you miss? Who do you want to know what happened to this character or that character or the other character? Mm. What happened in this fight? I never felt like I got the end of it. There are questions out there that circulate. And while we are developing our world according to what the creators think is a good idea, we really want to appeal to our devoted readers. So what are you interested in? Drop us a line at Privateer Press and say, hey, I'd like to know more about character X or character Y. Maybe you love one of the new ones. Maybe you totally dig Wolf. I think Wolf is a cool character. Write to us. Write to us and let us know. Get in on this. Get in on board. This is, the app is not a platform in which we just speak from a pulpit. It's interactive, right? We work on it all the time. We make upgrades and changes and additions all the time. Every single day, there's somebody fooling around in the app saying, let's do this because it'll be cool. Tell us what you'd like to see. We'd love to hear from you.
And where's the best place for them to go to send that feedback?
I'll tell you what. I'm gonna put myself on the line here. I'll take responsibility for that. Mike Ryan at privateerpress.com.
Ooh,
drop me a line.
Spicy.
I know. Look what I've done. Oh, my gosh. I'm going to put myself on the line. People are going to write to me and they're going to say, I don't really want to talk about the lore, but do you know that you missed a period in chapter 4 of this Iron Kingdoms book? I don't know what your problem is, Ryan.
Tomorrow it's going to be like 10,000 unread emails and then everybody else's emails.
Yeah. I'm not promising to answer anybody. I don't want to get that out in the open, but I am absolutely going to read everything you sent and I'm going to share them where appropriate. I'm going to share them with the team so we can start talking about what else would be cool.
Sounds awesome. Well, this has been an exciting segment. I can't wait to have you on for the next one. There's going to be so much to talk about.
Well, thank you so much for having me on this time, sir. I know that you're about to start the editing progress. And so if I get down to, hi, I'm Mike Ryan, please write to me here. I totally understand. That'll be the whole thing.
Well, do you want to say roll drums? Hello, everyone, and welcome back. In this segment, joining me is none other than the magnificent John Schwinkels.
I'm magnificent.
You are magnificent. I love having you on the Primecast. It's always a pleasure. How you doing, John?
I'm awake and getting ready to fly out to a suburb of Chicago here in just under a month.
That's exciting. Right around the corner. So that kind of segues right into what we're talking about, and there's no need to waste any more time here in the intro. We have John on today to talk about upcoming conventions and what's going on. So John, why don't you take it away and tell us what's happening?
Well, the big thing on the plate at the moment is Adepticon, which is coming up the third weekend in March. So we've got barely any. That's basically tomorrow. It's March 20th through the 24th. We're packing kind of a lot of stuff into that 4 days. So we've got the return of the Formula P3 Grandmaster Painting Competition, as per usual, and then a whole host of events going on in the event hall that whole weekend for people to get all kinds of interesting looks into the lore of the Iron Kingdoms, as well as their ability to affect that lore.
That is the best part, being able to be part of the story. I just had Mike Ryan on in the previous segment to talk about the fiction and the app, and here is your chance to be part of it.
Well, yeah, for better or worse. And I say that because a lot of times there's a lot of really fun upsets and different kind of emergent things that happen at these events that make people both like jump up out of their chairs or just shake their heads without the dice betrayed them.
Wait a minute. You're the ones responsible for unleashing this terror upon us? What the heck?
Kind of.
I can see that in the after hours at game stores. Yeah, man. This one's on me.
This one's on me, or specifically on my dice. Yeah. But folks will also have their chance to revisit the Dragonfall event that we ran at Warfare Weekend. So they will get to play against Blightergast, which, if you have not seen that air quotes miniature in person, I say air quotes because that thing is huge.
Yeah, there's big old dragon miniature about it.
It's so freaking awesome. If you have not had a chance to see that thing in person, it is a treat. So I definitely recommend, even if you weren't able to sign up for the event before they sold out, come by the hall and just check it out, because the amount of work that was put into that thing is almost obscene.
It's massive. It has basically like an army carrying tray as a base.
Oh, bigger, bigger, like the plate of the base itself. When Blightergast is broken down, he almost fits on a pallet.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's obscene. Come look at the thing, gaze in splendor and wonderment at a mighty dragon emerging from the lava to eat and or corrupt everything.
Most definitely. And if you take pictures with it, make sure to tag us at Privateer Press on your social medias, because we would love to see you with our gigantic miniature dragon.
Absolutely. And then, of course, we've got the new legendary battle for this year that, well, for being premiered at Adepticon, that folks will get a chance to interact with and see what kind of horrible things that we have in the works as the Dragonfall event itself basically continues through this one.
That's so awesome. So what's next? What comes after this upcoming event?
Well, after Adepticon, there are going to be any number of community run events going on. I know we've got the Boker Brawl out east.
Boker Brawl.
That a bunch of people are going to be attending as they, you know, both prepare for and get ready for some of the other events coming down the line. The next one for us that we'll be hitting in mass will, of course, be Gen Con in August. And you can expect to see a continuation of those narrative events, as well as some surprise new releases and other things that I can't talk about yet.
Classified. So that's exciting. We've got Adepticon and then Gen Con, and Gen Con's always a huge show. There's nothing quite like Gen Con. Are there any other big events that we're going to be taking the crew to this year?
After that, the other one that is basically on my docket every year is Warfare Weekend, as well as possibility of swinging out to visit the WTC again, which has been an absolute joy to be a part of the last 2 years. So hopefully we can pull a repeat. It's the weekend right after Gen Con, so that one is going to be a bit touch and go. Those are the ones that are firmly set in stone. Other ones may pop up.
Right on. So what is your favorite part of the convention season? Like, you have to do this every year and you get to see so many of them and go to so many of them. What's the highlight for you, John?
The highlight for me is the fact that at any of these shows, people are just all in, right? Mm-hmm. They're there to have fun at that event. They're there to play games with their friends or make new friends. And just in general, the positivity and that camaraderie that comes through everyone enjoying the hobby and enjoying these games is what energizes me for the rest of the year.
It's so true. It's such a vibe to just both see people that you know and get to connect and catch up with, but also just meeting new friends. The amount of positivity as you're walking through the con halls, you'll just see somebody and they'll like see your army, or they'll like see your t-shirt and be like, yo, what's up? I really love trolls too. And before you know it, you have spent 30, 40 minutes, an hour, lunchtime. It just goes by so fast because there's so much excitement to share.
Exactly. And it doesn't matter what you're into as far as the games are concerned, like, you know, like what your favorite faction is or what your favorite play style is and any of that stuff. You've got people who are going to be like 100% all in on doing that with you. Right. They're going to be like, hell yeah, let's get these games in. Let's roll some dice. Let's make things go boom.
Absolutely. It is probably the most fun I have playing any game is going to War Machine Convention. And then I feel like even though I've been playing forever, I always walk away learning something. Like you get better at, you know, both the aspects of the game and the knowledge portion of it. I know that, you know, the last time I went to LVO, I was completely convinced of a certain like synergy and way things were built, and then sitting down with other players, you know, talking to them, and they're talking about things that I was like, oh man, I hadn't considered that, that's really cool, and sharing some of my ideas with them and them getting to like see it from my perspective, and that shared knowledge really does just enrich, you know, the experience completely.
Oh, absolutely. New perspectives and insights as far as the subtleties of the games, etc. Like, can't beat it.
And getting to hang out with the privateers, like one of my favorite people to see at every convention is John.
It's me.
It's you. Yeah, it's
even though at pretty much every show, anytime someone comes out to me, I am already exhausted. Oh. I try to put some extra gas in the tank so that I'm not bringing down the overall vibe. But usually come literally the first day of the show, much like the rest of the crew, we've been, you know, like building a booth and stocking everything and, you know, like doing all the prep work. So
taking
by then I'm already
crates and
I'm already tanked. But like I said, this part of the job is what gives me my energy. So I am very thankful for everyone that comes by to hang out, say hi, pick up the new goodness, or just be a part of what it is we make these games for.
Definitely. And building the booth by itself is already like a labor of love because you're bringing out shelves and product and stuff. But it's also, when we go to Gen Con, it is so much bigger. Like the Lego castle that is constructed is massive and a like all hands on deck situation.
Well, yeah, many hands make light work. So, you know, the more people involved, the faster it's going to go. And the sooner everyone can sit around and wait for the forklifts to bring more stuff.
Oh, yeah. I remember going to Gen Con with you and we were tearing it down. John was literally dual handing bricks off of it, just like, clack, 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 clack. I was like, this man's a monster.
I got one speed. Go.
Yeah, it's true. A lot of labor, a lot of love, but it is absolutely worth it every time.
100%.
Well, John, is there anything else that you want to share we didn't get to? Any passion projects, anything you want to talk about? You want to just talk some shop?
Basically, my head is completely wrapped up in this stuff, other than, you know, today being leap day and all hail Frob.
All hail Frob. That was the best, man. When you have a whole meeting and everybody's just like, Frob, Frob, Frob. You'll get it in a minute.
Yeah, I like to think that insider proved that we understood the assignment.
Yes. Oh, it's so good. Well, John, it's been an absolute pleasure. I always enjoy having you on. I don't want to take any more of your time. I know you're a busy guy. You want to say roll drums?
Roll them drums.